Chapter 1. The Year of the Black Hound, Dale Reckoning, 1296. So many moving parts. She didn't like walking these particular boulevards of Men's Oberon, known as the Brerin, or Stench Streets. Here lurked the houseless drow rogues, cast-offs and refugees from houses sacked. Here lurked the fallen priestesses and the dangerous bastard children of this house or that, doomed to a life of poverty. Mostly, at least, for Matron Malice of House Doerden also knew that here lurked the members of Bregan d'Earth, a band of mercenaries that had grown quite powerful and wealthy within the city's structure. Rogues all, but useful rogues to the house matrons who knew how to take advantage of their services. From Zacnaphane, her consort and house weapon master, Malice had contacted Jarlaxle, the leader of Bregan d'Earth, and received the name of the person she intended to visit this day, the person for whom she was walking the stench streets of Men's Oberon. It was quite a sacrifice, and the matron had already made up her mind that this person had better tell her that which she wanted to hear, or she would leave the man dead on the floor of his hovel. Malice was quite relieved when she at last spotted the house in question. She wasn't afraid of this part of her journey, just disgusted, and wanted to conclude her business and return to her house as soon as possible. She moved to the door, glanced about for the escorts who were shadowing her, and nodded for them to lock down the area. Then she cast a spell, then a second, both at the door, then added a third and a fourth upon herself to protect from any trickery. A fifth spell blew open the door, and Matron Malice strode through into the small room beyond, to the shocked expression of the robed man on one side of the table within, and a look of absolute terror on the face of the woman sitting across from him. "I am not done here," the man protested. Malice looked from him to the crystal ball set on a base in the middle of the small circular table. She could just barely make out the distorted shapes of an image floating within it. A wave of her hand cleared the ball. "You are now," she said. The woman then protested. "I paid well for my time." Malice's glare stole her voice at the end of the sentence. The matron took a good look at the woman. She was younger than Malice, but not by much, and though she was shapely and seemed to think herself quite attractive and alluring, given the cut of her dress, her face and bare arms showed the scars and bruises of one living in the darkness of the stench streets. "You wear no house emblem, child," she said. "To which matron do you belong?" "Why would I tell you?" "Because if you do not, then I know that you belong to no house, so if I kill you, no one will care."
"Woman," protested the robed man, and he stood to face the intruder. He was old and withered, wearing more than a few scars on his face, and his threadbare old robes hung loosely on his two thin shoulders.
"Priestess," she corrected.
"Priestess," he said, his tone a bit less indignant.
"High priestess," Malice corrected.
"High priestess," the old drow corrected, voice thinner.
"Matron," Malice corrected, playing her hand openly, and the drow male seemed to shrink. He cleared his throat.
"I am not accustomed to uninvited guests," he said calmly. "You startled me."
"And you, dear," Malice said, turning her gaze on the woman. "Are you ready to boast of a house? Though, of course, you know that if you name one and are proven a liar, the punishment will grow you 8 legs instead of just losing the 2 you seem to cherish."
The woman shifted at that, pulling down the top fold of her slit dress to better cover her legs.
"You are of no house," Malice said,
when the clearly terrified woman stuttered over some indecipherable mumble.
"Go outside and wait for me," Malice instructed. "Perhaps better things await you in your future."
She glanced back at the robed man.
"Is that what you saw in the crystal ball for her?"
The drow appeared truly flummoxed.
"It is, yes?"
Malice added, throwing the weight of a spell of suggestion behind the question.
"Yes," the man blurted.
Yes, yes, of course. I was about to tell her.
Go, Malice told the woman, and she wisely scrambled from the chair and darted outside. Never taking her gaze off the man, Malice walked over to the vacated chair and moved to sit. She glanced at the fabric, though, and the many stains upon it. A wave of her hand sent it flying aside. A quick incantation produced a floating disk of blue light where the chair had been, and upon that, Matron Malice sat. He motioned to the other chair, but got only a concerned and confused stare in return.
You are Paul Cross, once of a house that shall no longer be named, Malice said.
I am of House Oblodra.
No, you're not. Not yet. Though you hope they will one day take you in. Or should I say you hope they will not see that you are not truly a master of the magic of the mind, but rather a mundane wizard with one extraordinary gift. The man cleared his throat. But there was more nervousness than indignity in the sound.
Sit down, Paul Cross, Malice ordered. I am your most important customer.
How? I do not understand, the man replied awkwardly,
but he did take his seat, which seemed to Malice a clear signal of surrender.
Jarlaxle told me of you, Malice explained.
The old drow man blew a sigh.
He could have arranged.
I do not need him to arrange anything. I am here, you are here, and I require a service.
She shifted on the floating disk and crossed her legs comfortably, wanting to show this fool that she was confident of her ability to obliterate him with a word.
Who am I? She asked.
And she placed her snake-headed scourge on the table, the living serpents writhing and hissing, their fangs dripping deadly venom. Paul Cross took a deep breath, then cautiously leaned forward and began mumbling, staring into the crystal ball, which immediately clouded.
Tell me, seer, who I am. And tell me why I am here, said Malice.
He continued to stare and continued to chant for a long while. Malice couldn't make out many of the words, but she understood the arcane inflection of a mage well enough, which played into what Jarlaxle had told her of the man. This drow, Paul Cross, had graduated from Sorcerer, the drow academy for wizards, and had been well regarded until he had fallen out of favor with the mighty Gromf Beanri, an event coinciding with the utter destruction of his family house. Since that long-ago day, he had made his meager living on the stench streets, telling fortunes, and he had been doing it for so long, according to Jarlaxle, he had actually become quite adept at it. And more than that, Paul Cross survived because he knew how to keep the secrets of his clients.
Matron Dowerden, he said a few moments later, obvious respect in his voice. I have heard of you. I am honored that you sought my services. Prove you are worth it.
The man licked his lips and cleared his throat and went back to concentrating on the crystal ball. Never averting his gaze, he reached into a pocket and produced a quartet of small bones, which he tossed on the left side of the ball. Then he reached in again and drew forth four more, tossing them to the right side, which drew more hissing threats from the snakes of the scourge. Despite herself, Malice admired the man's concentration as he glanced left, then right, where he managed to ignore the deadly serpents and focus on his thrown divinatory relics.
Yes, he said, and a thin smile creased his face. Yes, great matron Malice, you are with child.
I knew that, she stated flatly.
She lied. She had only suspected a pregnancy, but that wasn't the most important question here, of course.
Tell me the sire, she ordered.
Paul Cross swallowed hard and seemed off balance, and of course he should be. Telling a matron she was pregnant was almost always a blessed thing, of course, but telling her that her child was from a man not her preference could get somebody horribly murdered or worse. The sire, Malice said again flatly. Tell me the father of this child. Look in your ball and name the man. You know of me, and so you know my reputation,
One proudly earned, I assure you. I can narrow it down to 4 possibilities. You will tell me which man it is. The man began to sweat. His pleading to the crystal ball became a bit more uneven and edgy, his nerves sounding clearly with every arcane syllable. But then he stopped suddenly, staring. For a moment, he seemed confused. But then the grin returned and his expression showed an epiphany.
I know this man, he said, and Malice realized that he was talking to himself.
As she considered that remark and this location, hope began to swell within her.
Who is the father? She demanded.
He was of House Simfrey, the seer dared to reply, for House Simfrey was no more, and it was not considered wise for someone, particularly a lowly male, to speak the name of that which did not exist.
Zacnaphane, he quickly corrected. Zacnaphane de Werden is the fault.
He fell forward, staring more deeply into the ball, and from the backside, Malice could tell that the images were changing quickly, that the seer was gaining insight and knowledge. He didn't dare interrupt, not then. A long while later, the seer gave a gasp and fell back in his seat, seeming fully spent, his robes clinging to his emaciated form, his face lathered in sweat.
Yes, Matron Malice, your hopes are realized, he said confidently.
Malice was impressed, though she wasn't about to show it.
As with your daughter, Priestess Virna, this is a child of Zacnaphane, the seer told her.
You know him.
I knew of him, Palkros admitted, though that was many decades ago. I am glad that you are pleased with this news.
It would not take a seer to see that. Who would not be thrilled at the thought of another daughter sired by the great weapon master? Palkros nodded, but his expression turned to one of curiosity.
I did not say it would be a daughter, he remarked.
You did not have to. Zacnaphane is too great a lover and sire to bring forth a mere male, Malice asserted, but seeing Palkros's scowl, added, You doubt the blessings of Lolth?
Of course not, he blurted. I would not even waste your time to look further to confirm that which you already know.
Matron Malice didn't rise to leave. She just willed her floating disc toward the door, waved it open, and glided out into the street. There stood the woman from the table, shifting nervously from foot to foot, wearing a look fluctuating between hopefulness and trepidation.
What do you want? Malice growled at her.
You told me to wait outside for you, the woman replied.
Are you good at following orders?
Yes, matron, she said.
Then you will make a fine slave at my house, said Malice. And she looked to the shadows past the woman and gave a slight nod.
Yes, matron, what? A slave? I am not—
Her sentence ended there as a fine sword slid through her, back to front, the tip exiting her flesh just below her left breast, bits of her heart upon it. You are no witness either, Malice told her as she fell down dead. She and her entourage returned to the west wall and housed the Werden.
You did well, then, Jarlaxle told Palkros a bit later, the flamboyant mercenary leader taking a seat at the divining table, though he had long before warned the seer never to try a divination regarding him.
She killed.
Maida Flava was dying anyway, Jarlaxle interrupted. You knew that, she knew that. It is a pity, yes, but it was a better end than the yellow mold growing in her lungs would have offered.
Palkros dropped his old face into his thin hands.
What is the problem? Jarlaxle bade him. You told her what she wanted to know. She left quite happy.
Happy enough to murder someone, came the sarcastic response.
An act which no doubt made that one even happier, Jarlaxle replied, with a laugh that sounded quite helpless, because it was.
Palkros sighed and buried his face again.
She won't kill you, you old fool, Jarlaxle said. She would have done so already. You told her what she wanted to hear.
The worst that will happen is that you will have to suffer her presence again sometime in the future if Zachnephane shoots true once more.
I told her what she wanted to hear, Pau Cross agreed, but I did not tell her all that I saw.
Jarl Axel perked up at that.
It is not a daughter growing in her belly, the old seer explained. It is a son.
You lied to her?
Pau Cross shook his head vehemently.
She did not even bother to ask. She was so sure. She will not be pleased, not at all.
Then it is a son, Jarl Axel said with a shrug, as if it did not matter.
Matron Malice already has two, does she not? Malfein and Dinan?
It was Jarl Axel's turn to blow a heavy sigh, one that continued to grow heavier as he played the scenario through. No, indeed, Matron Malice would not be pleased, and even less so in her knowledge that this doomed child was the progeny of Zachnephane.
Jarl Axel took his leave then, and made his meandering way to the Oozing Myconid, the finest tavern in the Stench Streets, particularly since Jarl Axel had purchased a controlling interest in the place some 50 years earlier. He wasn't surprised to find Zachnephane there. His scouts had already reported as much to him, after all. The weapon master sat at his usual table in the back right-hand corner of the common room.
"Ah, what brings you out on this fine night?" Jarl Axel asked as he approached, motioning to the bar for some more drinks.
"Same thing that brings me anywhere," Zachnephane replied. "Wherever I am, I can find happiness in knowing that there are 100 other places in this city I'd rather not be."
Jarl Axel stared at him for a long moment. "I'm trying to determine if I should be complimented."
"You shouldn't."
That brought a laugh from Jarl Axel.
"In any case, it is good to see you again. We went years without so much as a greeting. And what now, the fourth time in the last 2 10-days?
"Malice has been extraordinarily wretched of late," Zachnephane replied and took a long swig of his drink.
Jarl Axel almost said something that would have tipped his hand, but he bit it back.
"The witch is pregnant," Zachnephane declared.
Jarl Axel started in surprise, not from the news, of course, but from how fast the news had traveled. Had Matron Malice even returned to House Dewarden from her visit with the seer? Jarl Axel stammered over a response, finally settling on, "Is it yours?"
"Are you hinting that my wife is unfaithful?" Zachnephane said with a scowl.
Jarl Axel laughed, as did Zachnephane when he couldn't hold the angry facade any longer. Matron Malice's sexual excursions remained a matter of public record and awe, after all.
"I'm almost certain that I'm the father," Zachnephane said.
"Because you're just better than the others?" Jarl Axel teased.
"Quality, yes," Zachnephane replied. "But also the matter of quantity. The witch hasn't let me sleep in weeks. I can always tell when she's getting ready to sack another house."
Jarl Axel nodded. Just as her appetite was well known, so it was no secret among those in the know that House Dewarden was setting its sights on House de Vere. And no one was more in the know than Jarl Axel of Bregan de Earth.
"You were happier with this news the last time, with the first one," Jarl Axel observed.
Zachnephane held up his free hand helplessly as he took another swallow of his drink. The new round arrived then, and Jarl Axel took his own and quickly waved the serving man away.
"You do not feel that pride any longer when you look upon Virna?" he dared to ask. "She seems rather exceptional as priestesses go."
"Yes and no," Zachnephane admitted. "I could have expected no more from any daughter I sired in the house of Malice Dewarden than Virna has offered. I am no fool. I know this. And knew it from the moment I first saw my child, and saw that my child was a girl. I think she has done well, but I'm not going to deny the pain of seeing my child, my daughter, become a devotee of that wretched Loth."
"What choice did she have?
What chance did she have?"
Zachnephane corrected. He gave a little resigned chuckle. It is interesting, and it caught me by surprise, I admit, this purpose of parenthood, these bonds beyond the expected.
What do you mean? Jarlaxle asked, surprised to hear Zachnephane speaking so openly.
The purpose, all of it, Zachnephane replied, of this existence. I mean, on a most basic level, I fear death, and I think that true of everyone but the most addled in their god beliefs. I long for personal immortality, of course. Don't you?
I don't know that I'd... I mean, that would be a long time, yes?
So you lie to yourself that you will one day welcome that last close of your eyes? Zachnephane snorted. The Jarlaxle I know will try to talk death itself out of that bargain.
Jarlaxle lifted his glass in a toast to that thought.
So yes, I would desire immortality and hope there is an existence beyond this one, said Zachnephane. I am surprised, though, to learn that through my children, I find some relief against my fears. They are a form of immortality. I never thought of it like that until the day I first saw Virna.
That's a good thing.
It is a scary thing, Zachnephane replied. To see your child, Jarlaxle, is to know vulnerability, is to know that there is something in the world that leaves you truly vulnerable, that there is this person more important to you than you, and that if anything terrible happened to her, it would be 100 times more painful than if it had happened to you.
I fear death. I don't want to die. This I know. But I know, too, that I would throw myself before a spear aimed for my child, even one who has become a priestess of the Spider Queen.
So you are pleased that Matron Malice is again with child? Jarlaxle asked. Your child?
Zachnephane seemed perplexed when faced with a stark question. He gave what seemed a shrug, then finished his drink and slid his chair back from the table.
I have to be back in the house, he said, rising. We have much to do.
Before the war.
There is no war, Zachnephane protested.
What a silly notion. House de Worden has no ambitions, of course, that would go against the edicts of the city's ruling council. But we must prepare ourselves in case something terrible befalls one of the houses ranked above us.
Of course, Jarlaxle agreed, and he smiled at Zachnephane's reminder of how truly demented the laws of Menzo Baranzon were. There was nothing wrong with wiping out a rival house, of course. The only wrong would be getting caught in the act. That, the getting caught, and not the act itself, was what the ruling matrons could not abide. He watched Zachnephane all the way out of the bar, then sat back and digested the unusually candid conversation with the typically reserved man. He knew that House de Worden was mere months from their attack on House de Vere, and so he likely wouldn't see his friend again for many months, perhaps years. And it was an interesting feeling, noticing how much that saddened him. That's why he so savored these moments sitting across from Zachnephane, for the man was ever full of surprising depth and insight. Jarlaxle appreciated that, but it weighed on him now. Zachnephane would sire a boy this time, and since this would be the third son of House de Worden, the devout matron Malice would surely give the child to the Spider Queen quickly and mercilessly. Particularly given this conversation, Jarlaxle feared that such an act would utterly devastate his old friend. Matron Malice didn't like this place. Not at all. Too many males haunted the winding corridors and sweeping stairs or kneeled before the vast shelves of scrolls and old tomes. And not just any males. These were the most powerful men in Menzo Baranzon, including more than a few, notably Archmage Gromf, the eldest son of Matron Mother Bayenri herself, who could likely destroy Malice in a fight. Even more disconcerting, Matron Malice did not belong in this place, and very few knew she was here. And these potential adversaries, the great drow wizards of Sorcerer, could surely dispose of a body.
I am right here, came a soothing voice. No, not a voice, but rather a telepathic message that resonated within her. It has been arranged. You are here at the suffrage of Archmage Gromf, and none would dare move against you.
Matron Malice hated allowing that wretched Jarlaxle creature and his even more wretched Oblodrin Sionis's friend into her thoughts, but she couldn't deny that Jarlaxle's magical message was anything but comforting. The woman winced at that internal admission and concentrated even more fiercely on expelling Jarlaxle from her thoughts. If he was in there talking to her, then he could also be in there feeling her emotions as if they were his own. She did not want him to recognize her trepidation. She was the matron of House de Worden, a rising and powerful drow house after all. Malice came to a strange and narrow wooden door, one that would have seemed more fitting in the tower of an elven wizard in some ancient forest above ground. Its knotted boards rose to shoulder height, then rounded and curved upward into somewhat of a point. The matron cast a spell of warding, then another of magical detection. Before she finished the second, the door swung inward, revealing a small landing and a dark descending stair. "Be well, Matron Malice," said the voice in her head. "I will await your return." He couldn't go down there with her, at least not magically, Malice thought, for this portal was set with a powerful spell of disenchantment. The woman took a steadying breath and strode forward onto the landing. She grasped a smooth and rounded railing, the unfamiliar touch of wood, surface wood well burnished. The railing creaked, as did the stairs when she began her descent. Down and around they wound, far below the multi-towered structure of Sorcere. She was in blackness then, so that even with her keen drow vision, she could not see the wall beside her or the stairs before her. She went on, not even attempting to cast a magical light. She didn't need it. She was a matron of a rising and powerful house, she told herself resolutely. No male would dare strike at her. She didn't count her steps, but she knew it was more than 100 later, when she spotted a distant light far below. A single candle, it seemed. Spiderwebs brushed her face, but that neither startled nor scared Matron Malice. Indeed, the presence of spiders comforted her. These were allies of Lolth, the Spider Queen, and Matron Malice was in the favor of the goddess. She picked up her pace, managing a smile when she felt a spider run off a web and skitter down her cheek. Lolth was with her. It occurred to her that the mere presence of these blessed little creatures was an admission of fealty by this maid she had come to visit. She came off the last step, onto a wider floor. It was still dark, but not black, with a candle burning in its sconce on a table set off to the side. As she neared, she noted a chair waiting for her on the right side of the table, and a seated figure off to the left, not near the table, but against the natural stone wall a few feet from the setting. Malice understood. She took her seat. "Greetings. I am honored," the hunched, robed figure said. He kept his head bowed, his gray cowl pulled below his face. "Look at me," Malice ordered, for she was curious. It had been a long time since she had seen this man, looking down at him, straddling him after a torrid tryst. "No, matron, it is better that I do not." "How am I to properly prepare the unguent if I do not even fully understand the depth of the affliction?" "It is not an affliction," the man said, his voice growing tight with anger. Malice thought to reiterate her command more forcefully. She was a matron and he a mere male, but she held back. This wizard, Gelrus Hanet, was an accomplished master in Sorcere, a powerful wizard, though one who was, apparently, somewhat reckless. His specialty was in creating new spells, combining magical effects to make the whole greater than the sum of the individual Dwyamers. Many of the spells taught at Sorcere were the result of the work of Gelrus, though anonymously, by order of the Archmage. Such dabbling was not without reward, but also not without great risk, and on one occasion decades before, Gelrus's magical combination had backfired, quite literally, taking the flesh from his face, which was, by all accounts, Malice had heard, little more than a mix of bone and green goo. Now she wanted to see it, even more so because the wizard was clearly uncomfortable showing her. Seeing it would give her an edge here, perhaps, by putting Gelrus into a measure of discomfort, and Matron Malice was never one to forego a possible advantage. "Look at me," she ordered. Normally, she would have strengthened such a demand with a magical spell, but such an enchantment would likely have little effect on the formidable wizard. And if she made the magical attempt, he would probably detect it.
"I have that which you seek," Gelruus answered instead, a quite effective deflection. "I have associates at Arachtinolith, and what the priestesses have shown me, along with that which I hold here in my own library, informs me that the long-ago rumors you heard were not without merit."
"So it can be done," Malice said, leaning forward. She reminded herself not to give up on viewing this disfigured creature, but that seemed like a distant desire in that moment.
"It can be done, and it is not so difficult a task," the mage answered. "I believe that it would be a more popular and common occurrence if it was more widely understood. And of course, if it did not hold dire implications for the child."
"Such as?"
Gelruus shrugged. A weird and unbalanced motion in his heavy robes and with his scrawny shoulders, and did look up then. Matron Malice fell back in her chair in surprise and horror. Nothing she had heard of his disfigurement could have prepared her for the reality of Gelruus Hanet, the faceless one. The descriptions had been honest, though, for his face was a collage of bone edges, stretched and desiccated skin, lipless and gumless mouth, and a drooping triangular hole where his nose used to be. He didn't seem to have any eyelids either, appearing like a corpse long decaying, except for the notable splotches of green goo, some looking like the wax refuge of a melted candle, other bits seeming almost foamy and more fluid. Her last recollection of the man flashed in Malice's thoughts. He had never been overly handsome by drow standards, but pretty enough. But now...
"It is an auspicious beginning to life," Gelruus answered.
Malice shook away her surprise. She took a deep breath, which merely gave her a blast of the rotting aroma of the wizard's face, and tried to respond, though she had completely lost the conversation.
"You asked of the implications to the child," he reminded her. "It would be an auspicious beginning."
"Yes, yes, of course," she stammered. "But is it more than that? Is there a curse, a lasting stain?"
The faceless one shrugged again.
"I have seen nothing to indicate so, but then most of the children born in the ritual have been sons, third sons, and so..."
He let it hang there, and Malice needed no explanation. A third son in a drow house was traditionally given to Loth.
"Perhaps that is the curse of birth magic," Gelruus then added. "The curse to the house that a son was born, not a preferred daughter, and a most deadly curse to the child very soon after."
"Tell me more of it," Malice pressed. "Quickly."
"There are wizards who routinely inflict pain upon themselves in the moments of casting, using that sting to sharpen their focus and thus produce the most powerful spell they can manage."
"This is just about the pain of childbirth?" Malice asked incredulously. "Yes, of course it hurt, but that alone couldn't possibly explain the potential power of the birthing magic ritual."
"There is more to birth than pain," Gelruus replied. "It is an experience unlike any other, one that encompasses both the body, both bodies, mother's and child's, and the mind, heart, and spirit, the corporeal and ethereal. It is a moment of great vulnerability, but also one of great reception. And in that open state, the mother seems to collect all the magical energies about her, almost as if she is bringing the magical energy of those spellcasters around her into her own Dwyamer."
"How is that possible?"
Gelruus shook his head. "I am a mere male, Matron Malice. I cannot fully understand the experience of giving birth."
He lifted up a skinny hand, holding a scroll tube, and moved it across to the woman.
"You have read it?" Malice asked, taking the item.
"There would be no reason," Gelruus said with a wheezing chuckle. "This is one spell that is truly beyond my means. Also, my priestess associates forbade me from even glancing at the spell, and instructed me to relay to you, though they know not your identity, that great secrecy is demanded. Copy nothing of the Dwyamer, Forget it as you cast it, and speak little of it. Let the rumors swirl, as mystery is no threat.
Malice rolled the scroll tube in her hand, feeling the weight of his words. She had used birth magic before, but only in a minor way, and certainly nothing akin to this. Even on that occasion, though, a simple spell of poison to aid her ascent, she had felt possibilities more profound. Joining other priestesses in the ritual, she felt as if she could hardly breathe, as if she was holding in her hand the power of a goddess.
Clearly, Gelruz continued, this kind of power could be seen as a threat to the matrons of the ruling council. This is no mere Dwyamer, Matron Malice. Do not underestimate the magical destructive power you will discover in the heightened moments of childbirth. And I warn you, as one who wishes you well, do not seek to exploit or abuse that power beyond our agreement here. The ruling council and the priestesses of Arak Tinnilith will be paying attention, and the combined weight of what would fall upon House Dowerden in the event... Well, he left it there with another shrug.
I may need your protection, the young man, barely more than a boy, explained to Jarl Axel, the two sitting in the oozing Myconid late one quiet night.
You are the noble son of a ruling house. What could I possibly offer?
The man, Massage, sighed and shook his head at the ridiculous remark. Even he, who had rarely been out of his house before being sent to serve his older sibling as a slave and sorcerer at the Drow Academy, was worldly enough to understand the growing power of Bregan D'Earth. The band had the complete endorsement and protection of House Baenri. Even without that, Jarl Axel had created enough quiet alliances and assembled enough firepower to make the band of rogues formidable on its own. Jarl Axel knew it, and knew that Massage knew it. So his feigned humility could elicit no more than a groan from the young man.
Why do you think you would need the protection of Bregan D'Earth? Jarl Axel asked finally.
What you ask me to do could get me sacrificed or turned into a drider.
Ask? I have asked nothing of you, Jarl Axel reminded. You came to me with a request and a bag of gold coins.
And you refused my contract.
I told you that such things are better taken care of within a family. Else one risks war, and wars are messy and costly. But I did not ask you to do anything. You hinted that I might find more allies if I succeeded. How so? Jarl Axel asked.
Massage started to answer, but bit his lip and tried to honestly recount his previous meeting with this most enigmatic drow. When he had gone to Jarl Axel, hoping to pay for an assassination, the clever rogue had merely explained that such things were better handled within the house, both for the reason Jarl Axel had just reiterated, and also because then the assassin had, in no small way, proven himself worthy of the resulting rise in stature. Massage wanted Jarl Axel to do this. He was afraid, rightfully so, for his much older brother was quite powerful in the ways of arcane magic. At one point, powerful enough to be considered a possible future challenger to Gromf Baenri as Archmage of the Menzo Baranzon. All of that promise had fallen away in the flash of a spell gone horribly, irreversibly wrong.
I will tell you this much, Jarl Axel said, leaning forward in his seat, his hand coming over the table and sitting there, palm up, fingers beckoning.
How much? Massage asked.
All of it.
No.
Then I leave, and warn you to take great care in your next schemes, and great care in pointing any fingers or words toward me or this place.
It had better be worth the price, Massage mumbled, pulling out the small bag of gold and dropping it onto Jarl Axel's still-waiting palm.
Events are soon to unfold that may show you your opportunity, both to do that which you wish and to get away with it, Jarl Axel replied. Pay very close heed to the student who serves as your brother's primary assistant. As soon as he finished the sentence, Jarl Axel was up and away, not looking back. Massage cocked his head curiously as he watched the mercenary depart.
Alton? He whispered under his breath.
At first, he felt cheated, but he put that notion aside.
Jarlaxle's reputation was not to be dismissed. The rogue's cryptic words were known to move houses to war. The young apprentice, who thought himself a slave, drained his drink and left the using my conid soon after, determined to pay very close attention indeed.
"Why would you get involved in this?"
Dabne, the only priestess and one of the very few women in Bregan de Earth, asked Jarlaxle when the young man had left the tavern. Jarlaxle dropped the pouch of gold on the bar.
"No risk, and some coin to show for it," he replied.
"You can have all the coin you want without getting involved in the family squabbles of a ruling house," Dabne reminded.
"There may be gain here. The target is surely no friend to us, and if the whelp is successful, I'll know a secret he can ill afford to have whispered. And the whelp will no longer be a whelp, will he? He will be the elder boy of a powerful ruling house.
Still, that target is no minor player, nor is Matron Cinefe or the house she rules.
The house that speaks ill of us at every meeting of the ruling council," Jarlaxle reminded.
Dabne settled back and spent a while digesting that obvious exaggeration, if not outright lie. House Hunnett would not dare speak ill of Bregan de Earth in the presence of Matron Mother Beenry, and had even dealt with the mercenary band on more than one occasion to mutual benefit. But then, the priestess had her epiphany. When Jarlaxle referred to us, he didn't mean Bregan de Earth. He meant Zaknafane d'Owerden, and by extension, Jarlaxle as well. It was no secret that Matron Cinefe was often quite vocal against the quick rise of ambitious Malice d'Owerden and her band, and the rumors were long-standing that Malice's youngest daughter had been sired by Cinefe's patron, and that insatiable Malice had often bedded Cinefe's eldest son before his unfortunate circumstance. "You can have all the coin you want without getting involved in the family squabbles of a ruling house," Dabne repeated, because she was out of other things to say.
"Ah, yes," Jarlaxle agreed. "But it would not be as much fun."
Despite the final warning of the ugly, faceless one, Matron Malice was almost giddy with excitement when she returned to House d'Owerden. She would soon deliver another child of Zaknafane, and now she was confident that House de Vere would be destroyed. Even without the birth magic, she had thought that de Vere was ripe for the picking, and with this added boost, her victory seemed assured, and likely a victory with minimal damage to her own house. There was only one tempering notion here, or rather two potential issues, though very related. Despite her earlier bravado, could she really be certain that Zaknafane's progeny would be a daughter? And if it was a boy, she would have no recourse, particularly after utilizing a most sacred spell which required the blessing of Lolf. A male child, even Zaknafane's child, third boy of the house, would have to be sacrificed. If it was a daughter, there remained the possibility of a residual curse from the casting of the destructive birth magic. But no, Malice told herself, determined to press on in her insatiable desire to climb the ranks of Menzo Berenzon. They didn't know there would be a curse, or if there was, perhaps it wouldn't truly prove to be a curse at all, but possibly a blessing. Her eldest daughter, Breeza, was the child of a brutish sire, who was part demon or cambion, or some grandparent not of this plane of existence by all rumors, and yet the savage Breeza, and even more so the ultimately savage Uthagent Alarmgo, certainly couldn't consider that trait an affliction or curse.
"It will be a daughter, a priestess," Malice whispered to herself. "And she will have the ambition of Matron Malice and the discipline of Zaknafane."
As she smiled, she silently added, "And this one will have the compassion beaten out of her. She will not be like Virna."